turn over to, we're going to be in Daniel chapter 3. One of just kind of my favorite kind of messages to give because it applies so much to my own life. August 2001, there was 118 crewmen that died in a series of explosions caused a Russian submarine called the Kursk to sink. And 23 of those men survived for several hours in an isolated chamber after the explosion. One of them was a 27-year-old lieutenant. His name was, he's a Russian sailor, lieutenant captain named Dmitry Kolesnikova. And he wrote a note to his wife as he waited to die. And two words from that note were displayed in a black frame next to his coffin at his funeral service. "Mustn't despair. Mustn't despair," he wrote. For a 27-year-old Russian sailor whose life was suddenly, unexpectedly ending. Those were his last words. "Mustn't despair. Mustn't despair." And a strange thing that few people, not many, but occasionally there's one, experience in a moment in their life when they know that they're going to die. There was an essay in Time one time about this. And they said that it's almost an instinctive thing that in that moment they want to send a message. They want someone to know their story. Passengers on the planes that were used as kamikaze bombs in 9/11 used the last moments of their life to write notes and call those that they loved. Prisoners of the Nazis in the Warsaw ghetto, as they saw others being gassed or taken to gas chambers or just starved to death, as they realized what was going on, took their last breaths to write out notes and put them in cracks in the wall, hoping that someone besides the Nazis would find them and read their story and know their story. In that final moment of life, all of the scaffolding of life that we prop ourselves up with gets stripped away. All the stupid toys we spend our lives chasing, success, reputation, security, wealth, ease, comfort, means nothing. And all that's left for the person is what they really believe. What do you really believe? What have you really built your life on? If that moment were to come for you, and one day it will, we spend our whole lives pretending it will never come, but recognize or not, that final moment will come, and if it were here for you right now, what would you write? What would be the message you'd want to leave behind? What's your story, really? So if we turn in the Bible to Daniel chapter 3, again, if you don't have one, you can look on with somebody else, or there's ones at the end of the row. But we're going to look at a lot here, Daniel chapter 3. Because this moment came in the lives of three young men, possibly the same ages as Captain Kolesnikova. These are three men of great promise. They've risen to positions of eminence in the most powerful nation. They can look forward to having great families, deeply fulfilling lives, doing noble things for their people and for their God. And their hearts were full of hopes and dreams. And here's what's striking, though, about their story. Usually this moment comes when it comes, somebody realizes that death is inescapable. Okay? There's nothing they can do. And often the last message is an expression of regret of having to leave this life. But here, for these three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, death is very much escapable for them. So we're going to read part of their story. And first of all, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were Israelites. They're young men like Daniel. And were picked because they're the best of the best. And picked to serve the king of Babylon after Babylon had conquered Judah. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were friends of Daniel. They're given high positions in the administration of Babylon because of their friend Daniel. After Daniel had interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dream. In fact, let's back up and we're going to read the last verse of chapter 2, which says, "Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego administrators over the province of Babylon. while Daniel himself remained in the royal court. Okay? All right, now, chapter 3. Okay. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 90 feet high, 9 feet wide, set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O people, nations, and men of every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will be immediately thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the image of gold King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews who you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up." Well, furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harps, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I have made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace of God, the God we serve is able to save us from it. And he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." See, all that they had to do here was say the word. All they had to do was bend the knee to the statue, and their nightmare would be over, and they would be restored to positions of power and honor and status. They are headed toward unimaginable pain and death. And one word from them would mean life. And they wouldn't say it. They wouldn't say that word. They wouldn't bend that knee. Life or death, and they chose death. And this kind of devotion to God really is possible for real people. For ordinary people. They said, "The God we serve is able to save us from it. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, we will not bow. We will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." And that looks like their final words. Mustn't despair. Mustn't despair. Like, let's pick up the story there in verse 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. Now, 7 is often used in the ancient world as a metaphorical way of saying a lot. In Proverbs it says, "Though a righteous man falls 7 times, he rises again." Or, "A fool thinks he is wiser than 7 men who answer with discretion." Nebuchadnezzar is saying, "I want you to crank up this furnace as hot as you can possibly make it." And I want you to think for a moment what these three men are facing. Because in addition to the physical pain that can be involved in they'll be involved in this, you need to know that to deliberately burn someone to death is historically one of the most inhumane forms of execution. It involved treating a human being like an object, like a stick of wood to be disposed of, so there won't even be a corpse left to mourn, which is a really big deal in the ancient world. Historically, it's been reserved for witches, heretics, people that society just wants disposed of. So this is one of the cruelest, most painful, most inhumane treatments in the whole cruel history of the human race. And this is what these three men are waiting for. They're waiting to be thrown in the flames. This is the fate that they face voluntarily, knowing that at any moment a single word could save their lives. Now look at verse 21. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, notice the description of their clothes, we're going to come back to this later, but it says, alright, so these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into a blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent, and the furnace so hot, that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Nebuchadnezzar's rage is so intense, he's killed some of his own men, and it doesn't even register with him. This isn't a story about people running away out of a lukewarm fire. There's no hope, humanly speaking. We've got immobilized bodies being tossed into a raging inferno. That's the setting. And I want to just stop here for a moment and just imagine the experience of those three young men facing what seems like for them that's going to be their final moment. They've been faithful to the very end. They've been faithful to the last. And they're carried now to the furnace. Real people filled with courage and maybe some fear and defiance and faith, and they feel the heat. They see the men that carried them to the furnace collapse and die from the flames. And they're in the fire and they wait for the searing pain, for the numbness, for the smoke inhalation that will suffocate their lungs. But it doesn't come. They don't feel any different. And it begins to dawn on them, they're not even warm. There's no burns. There's no smoke. They're not even tied up anymore. They're walking around in there. And that's not even the best part. The best part is what happens that turns this from a miracle to a divine encounter. Look at verses 24 to 25. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, "Weren't there three men that were tied up and threw into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, O king." He said, "Look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods." So there's a fourth member of the furnace club, and he's unharmed. And apparently he's the one that's delivered the other three. And he convenes a little meeting right there in the furnace. So who is this fourth man that appears out of nowhere, who can cheat death and looks like a son of the gods? Well, the text doesn't say, but I think maybe it was Jesus. Kind of sounds like the kind of thing that he'd do. And they're walking around in the furnace together. Apparently they spent a little time together. World's greatest, you know, we're talking about signups, world's greatest small group meeting right there in the furnace. I mean, you know, let's go to prayer time. Anybody? I'm good. Great. You? Meshach? No. Anybody have a praise? Woo! Yeah, everybody. Great. You know, right there. But really, I wonder what they said to each other. I wonder if the fourth man in the furnace told them how proud the Father was of their loyalty and their devotion and their love. I wonder if he told them, because of this one act of faithfulness of theirs, their names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, would be remembered for thousands of years through the history of the earth to today, 2.5 millennia later, on the other side of the world, we remember their names. I wonder if he told them that for centuries, all around the world, that men and women who face suffering or persecution would just be, trials or even death will be immeasurably strengthened by hearing the story of what these three men had done. And I wonder what they said to the fourth man. I'll bet you they poured out adoration and gratitude and wonder and worship like they never had. They started by withholding worship from a false god, and they end up worshiping like they never had in their life. If you remember last week, we talked about they gave up counterfeit freedom, and instead, they found that they were free indeed. And the furnace, which looked like it meant was going to be the end of their lives, turned out to be the greatest thing they ever experienced. It was the can't-miss event of their lives, because the furnace turns out to be the place where they met God. And here's the point of the whole story. They were hoping to get delivered from the furnace, but God decided to deliver them in the furnace. If you're interested in filling in the little blanks, it's this. Sometimes God delivers people from the furnace, but sometimes God delivers people in the furnace. And God said to them what he says to people still, "I'll meet you in the furnace. I'll meet you in the furnace. You follow me, it's going to be dark. It's going to be scary. But I'll meet you in the furnace." Because he's a furnace kind of guy. And the place where full devotion can lead you, which looks scary and dangerous and painful, and maybe even like the end, turns out to be where Jesus is. Turns out to be, amazingly enough, to be the safest place of all. Turns out to be the adventure of a lifetime. And Jesus, again, says to people, what he says to people still, "I'll meet you in the furnace. You follow me. It's going to scare you. You keep following me. I'll meet you in the furnace." And he's saying it still. Maybe he's saying it to some of you here this morning. All right, let's keep going. Verse 26. Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace. And it doesn't say it, but I'll imagine he approached it from a pretty great distance. At least it says that he shouted, so. Nebuchadnezzar approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come here. Come out." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire. Wouldn't you just love to see that walk? They come out. And there's the satraps, the prefects, the governors, royal advisors got crowded around them. And they saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their heads singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. The writer says that not only were they not, their robes weren't even scorched. Not only are they saved and their hair is okay, God even protects their clothes. In fact, the word here for robe in verse 21 can be translated in upper body covering, which had a description in Aramaic that the king threw me into the fiery furnace, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. No, it doesn't really actually say that. But they came out of there with just the clothes on their back. It wasn't damaged at all. In fact, let's go on. Verse 28. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than to serve or worship any god except their own god. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses turned into piles of rubble. For no other god can save in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. He doesn't just restore them, he lifts them up to new positions, more opportunities to serve, to influence, to contribute. And I wonder, what do you think the rest of their lives were like? We don't know. This is the last view we have of them. This is the last time that they're mentioned in Scripture. But I wonder, as they went through life, if they ever thought how easily they might have missed this adventure. How easily they could have missed it if they'd just given in to fear. One word. One bent knee. They'd have missed the greatest adventure of their lives. They'd missed the greatest encounter or the fourth man in the furnace. I wonder if when they were real, real old men, many years later, you know, on the anniversary of this day, they get together and remember and wear their old robes. Which, of course, their wives, of course, would try to get them to throw away because they have holes on them and they're out of fashion. But they wouldn't do it. They wear their old robes and remember the time they were young men and full of courage and faith, and they defied a king, and they walked around in the flames, and they spent a few moments in the presence of the living God. I'll bet they did. I'll bet they never forgot that moment. Going into the furnace, which seemed like the last thing they wanted to do, turned out to be the greatest adventure of their lives. And ironically enough, the furnace, which looks like death, turns out to be the safest place of all. Why? Because God's there. Because God is there. Because sometimes God delivers people from the furnace, but sometimes God delivers people in the furnace. And I think those times are the greatest times in your life. And I mention that because I think there's a great danger, maybe one of the greatest dangers for Christ followers, living in a world as comfortable as this world that most of us inhabit. And the danger is that the primary goal of my life becomes furnace avoidance. They say, God, deliver me from pain, from discomfort, suffering, inconvenience. Make my life smooth. Make my life easy. Make my life comfortable. Make it pleasant. Remove obstacles from it. I mean, we avoid even just low-level flames. And I know we can tell stories around this room. I could tell you a long story. 10 years ago, I'm working for a struggling technology company as a chaplain and account manager. And I remember praying as I saw the steady stream of layoffs that God would keep me from being the next. But God didn't answer that prayer. Turns out corporate chaplain's not a huge revenue-producing position, and those were the first to go. And it doesn't matter how you say it. It doesn't mean if it has nothing to do with your job performance. When you lose a job for any reason, it feels like fire. It feels like failure. But God met me in the furnace and led me here. And I know I could go around the room. You know, I mean, Steve, there in the back, he lost his house, his work is unsure. But through it, he and Lori kept the faith that God was going to come through in his timing. He did. He's got him a wonderful new job, a company willing to pay all of his moving expenses as he moves to a new place, as God's met him in the furnace. I talked to you about a pastor friend who recently lost his job and didn't know if he could afford his house or where he's going to live and how this was going to affect his ability to be able to adopt a new baby because that's going to change his status with them. And God provided him with a better job and a new parsonage and a new baby from the adoption agency. God met him in the furnace. The Osterleys had a friend, a neighbor that's been on our prayer team. And Donald was just telling me on Friday that he found out it's a stage 4 cancer. Maybe it's maybe a month and a half to live. And I'm praying for him and his family that God will meet them in the furnace. And I know, just looking around the room, many of your situations, remembering the loss of a loved one during holiday time, the pressures at work, pressures, you know, becoming an empty nester, experiencing the struggles of being a teenager and all the pressures that come with that, relationship struggles. I know there's a lot of furnaces going on in this room, and we have to remember that our strength is made perfect in weakness. As God says, I'll meet you in the furnace. Yeah, I kind of have this picture of God having a, well, my calendar's on my phone, kind of having a calendar, you know, and I know God doesn't need a calendar because he's omnipresent and omniscient, so he's, you know, always everywhere, so he never has to remember to be somewhere. But kind of this picture of God having a calendar, whatever the date was that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had their deal with Nebuchadnezzar, that God's getting written down on it, whatever time it is, you know, 10 o'clock, or whatever, meet Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the furnace. You know, and what if they hadn't showed up? Their whole lives and adventure depended on that decision, their willingness to face the furnace. And I wonder, as I think of all of you, where on his calendar does God have your name written down someplace? I'll meet you in the furnace. And will you make it? Or might you bend the knee to some other God, the wrong God? So I want to ask you to consider doing something quite dangerous this morning, and nobody can force you or make you or coerce you or manipulate you into doing this. This has to be from you, but I want you to consider this, that you stop asking for less heat, if that's what you've been asking for, that you don't ask for an easier or richer or more pleasant or more secure life because there's something better. Now, it's amazing to me how often are just the human heart, the spirits and emotions of these potentially glorious creatures that we are, made in the image of God. How the human heart gets all attached and wrapped up and bound and enslaved by trivially stupid things. You know, somebody cut me off on the freeway and people get all bent out of shape. Did my boss give me an angry look at work and hurt my feelings? Did I not get the recognition that I must have at work or at school from the opposite sex? Did I get an unexpected expense, which means I can't have something that I've got to possess? Did someone interrupt my important time? Did someone create an obstacle in my life? Is my career not going high enough or fast enough as I feel that it's got to go? And I tell you, I think there's something to this as we study this. I think we're being called to a deeper measure of devotion. So I want to ask you this morning to consider. I want to ask you to consider to pray a dangerous prayer, and it's this. God, give me an opportunity to show my devotion to you. Give me an opportunity to show my devotion to you. I don't ask primarily, God, for comfort or riches or ease or security. God, give me an opportunity to show my devotion to you. And if you're not sure and you feel like, you know what, the honest truth is maybe my devotion level isn't where it should be, then you just talk to him about that. You know, just be real honest about it and ask for the presence of the fourth man in the furnace. And I know there's a lot of different situations, and maybe it's at work. I hear that you're praying to get in work in an easier environment. You know, I work with fallen, difficult, cranky, hostile people all the time. Sometimes I want to say, so do I. We just had an elders meeting on Wednesday. What I want to say is, so do the people who work with me. So do the people who work with me. Because it's a world of fallen people. It's a world of fallen, difficult, cranky, hostile people, and I'm one of them. And I'm one of them. And maybe you have people in your work who are far from God, or habits and behaviors that are really quite painful for you. And, Nebuchadnezzar was not exactly up for Employer of the Year award. And God used Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's willingness to go into the furnace to change his heart. And often people might get transferred to a nicer place or job with nicer people, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that would be good. I don't know. But maybe God's plan is to have you right where you are, at least today, so he can use you. Maybe he wants to grow you up in your judgment, in your discernment, in your ability to know when to speak and when to be silent. Your ability to love somebody. Would it be easier to resent them or dislike them or judge them or write them off? Maybe there's, maybe we need to stop praying for deliverance from the furnace and ask for the presence of God who meets you there. Maybe there's a Nebuchadnezzar that God wants to reach through you. Maybe it's a servanthood thing. Maybe God's whispering to you to get involved in some kind of service. And maybe it's in the town, or maybe it's with underprivileged, or maybe it's going overseas, or maybe it's just some sort of spiritual ministry and involvement around here. Maybe it involves using some kind of spiritual gift, and you're afraid to do it. You've been avoiding what feels like the furnace. God is in the furnace. Tell him that you'll meet him there. Maybe the furnace involves a relationship, or financial hardship, or giving, or sacrifice. I don't know what it is for you. All I know is that the golden statue and our world tend to evolve gods with names like comfort and ease and security and success. And somewhere along the line, too many people and too many churches have gotten the idea that following Christ had something to do with an easier life. So I kind of put it to you in form of a question. How many heroes in our faith had easy lives? How many? How many of those people written down in the great 11th chapter of Hebrews, the Hall of Faith, how many of them had easy lives? The writer of Hebrews says, I don't even have time to tell them all. And he lists the things that they faced, you know, shutting the mouths of the lions, the things that they did, and he includes in there, quenching the flames. Quenching the flames. Where did Jesus say to his followers, God has a wonderful plan for your life, and primarily that involves having a great house, an attractive spouse, terrific job, wonderful car, and an endless succession of easy days. Where does Jesus say that? What Jesus basically said to people was, follow me, and you're going to have a great big God, an outrageous joy, and you're going to be in trouble all the time. And they followed him. They followed him by hundreds. They followed him by the thousands. They followed him by the tens of thousands. They followed him through servanthood. They followed the same path that he walked on. They followed him through sacrificial generosity. They followed him through the community. They followed him into suffering. They followed him through persecution. They followed him to death. And do you understand that we're here in this room today? We are here because throughout history, hundreds of thousands of ordinary men and women, most of which will never be remembered in this world, names and faces that have long since been forgotten, said that they were willing to go into the furnace. They loved that God that much. They said, I'll suffer. I'll give everything for you. I'll die. And when they did, when their final moment came, which it will for all of us, when that final moment came, they knew, mustn't despair. Mustn't despair. God did not overlook them or abandon them. God said to them what he said to Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. What he said to Stephen, who was the very first follower of Christ to be murdered. What he said to Peter and Paul, who were beaten and persecuted and jailed and probably martyred as well. What he says to Martin Luther King and Jim Elliot and Corrie Ten Boom and Mother Teresa on the streets of Calcutta. What he says to his followers still today in China and Turkey and Albania. And Libya, and maybe, just maybe, to somebody this morning here in Dansville, I'll meet you in the furnace. I'll meet you in the furnace. I'll meet you in the furnace if you dare. If you dare. I'll meet you in the furnace. And I don't know what furnace you're facing. I don't know what this means for you. I just know who will meet you there. And he says, fear not. Fear not. Though you pass through the flames, they will not burn you. They will not destroy you. He says, I'll meet you in the furnace. That we could just say, all right, God, I'm scared. I'll meet you there. You tell him. And you tell him right now, if you can do that with a sincere heart. In fact, let's just take a few moments here to pray. A silent one. Because I don't know what the furnace is for you. I just know the one who will meet you there. Take a few moments to pour yourself out to God. To tell him, if you can, with a sincere heart, you'll meet him there. Heavenly Father, I thank you for each person here, even as they continue to pour out their hearts to you. God, I thank you for example of your servants, Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. God, and we just want to echo their voices, that we know that you are a God who is able for anything that we're facing right now, whether it's something physical or relational, something at work or at home, or just something in our own mind that we just can't get past or get over. God, we know that you are able to deliver us from it. But God, help us to learn from your servants who said that even if our circumstances do not change, we will not bow our knee to a lesser God. We will not bow our knee to an easier life, to avoid the place that you want to meet us. God, help us to have that full measure of devotion. Draw us into a deeper, closer walk with you. God, help us to have the courage to pray to you this morning. God, give me a chance to show my devotion to you. God, we are here. See our hearts. Know our thoughts. Help us to become better followers of you. We thank you. We want to give all of ourselves to you as best we can. Pray all this in your name, Jesus. Amen.